Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We know drugs can do miracles, ease pain, save lives. But do we need so many? And are we getting the right drugs for the right reasons? Melody Peterson covered the drug industry for years, and she says no. Americans, she says in a big new book, take too many drugs after too little good research, sold with too much hype by TV ads and compromised doctors. It is, she says, a scandal. This hour on Point, America's prescription drug problem and how we got here. Joining me from Los Angeles is Melody Peterson. She's a former reporter for the New York Times. Her beat was the pharmaceutical industry. She's out with a big new book called Our Daily Meds, how the pharmaceutical companies transformed themselves into slick marketing machines and hooked the nation on prescription drugs. Melody Peterson, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
You say that this industry, which so many Americans rely on or think they rely on, has been transformed over the last 25 years and not in a good direction. What's the broad outline of that transformation?
Well, you know, the marketing budgets have just increased exponentially. And many of the drug companies have actually put their marketers in charge, even of their scientific laboratories. So these companies are driven by marketing. And it's really the scope of this that is so frightening. Everyone knows about the television ads, but it's so much bigger than that.
I said at the outset that it was $12 billion Americans spent in 1980 and now maybe $200 billion. It's actually more like $250 billion. That is just a mind-boggling increase in that number of years. Do we have the health improvements to show for it?
Well, when you look at the global view, obviously these medicines can help you if you get the right one at the right time. So it's not the medicines that are the problem. It's the marketing that's the problem. And when you look at the global view, if you look at life expectancy over the world, my book really starts in 1980. Mm. And in 1980, a 65-year-old American woman could be comforted by the fact that her life expectancy was longer than any woman any other place in the world. But by now, if you looked on a list of 30 countries, a 65-year-old American woman had fallen to number 17 of 30. So despite all this money we're spending on prescription drugs, on doctors and hospitals, you know, we're falling behind the rest of the world.
I'm looking down a list here. The U.S. on the CIA's World Factbook list, U.S. life expectancy coming in at number 47 behind Guam and Jordan and Bosnia-Herzegovina. And yet you say we spend far and away more than anybody else on prescription drugs.
Oh, we absolutely do. When you look at consumer spending between 1980 and 2003, we doubled what we spent on new cars. We tripled what we spent on clothing, but we increased what we spent on prescription drugs by 17 times. So this has just been an incredible business strategy for the pharmaceutical industry.
What's wrong with marketing drugs? I mean, if pharmaceutical companies go into the laboratory and come out with drugs that can save lives, ease pain, help all kinds of afflictions, shouldn't they let the world know about it?
Well, every one of these drugs has very real risks. And when you're marketing is all about selling as much of a product as you can, whether that person really needs it or not, which is all right if you're selling computers or cold cuts, something like that. But it's definitely not all right if you're selling medicines. Patients need honest, objective information about these drugs because they mean life and death.
You describe the drugs themselves, and you just mentioned it, as holding their own risks. You see, every 5 minutes, someone dies from taking their medicines that a doctor ordered. Is it because these are dangerous medicines or because we're just piling on so many?
It's both. Actually, that study, that's a study that the FDA frequently cites, that estimated more than 100,000 Americans die every year from medicines they took just as the doctor directed. So that's not where the doctor made a mistake or the pharmacist made a mistake or the patient accidentally took too much. That's just when everything supposedly went right. So that's just side effects that if you read the drug's label or prescribing instructions, those are the side effects you will read.
You write, in our daily meds, almost 65% of the nation now takes a drug available only by prescription. Children line up in the dining hall of their summer camps to get their daily doses. Pharmacies stay open 24 hours to meet America's demand. Even the dogs get Prozac if they howl too much at the moon. Are you? I mean, the big picture you seem to be presenting here is that we've been kind of hooked as the industry's turned into a kind of pusher that's pushed the country beyond reason, rationality, need into a very, very expensive dependence on these drugs.
Absolutely. And, you know, for one thing, most of the marketing dollars go into the pockets of our physicians. So when the ads say, ask your doctor about drug A or drug B, the drug company has already been to your doctor and made sure he or she is ready to prescribe it. And that's one thing that has made our healthcare system so dangerous, because physicians were once the gatekeepers. They were the independent professionals who made sure we didn't get drugs we didn't need or drugs that could harm us more than help us. But now 9 out of 10 doctors take gifts or cash from the drug industry, and some take hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. They're no longer independent, so we've lost that key part of our drug safety system.
That's an amazing story you tell, and I wish you'd begin to give it to us in more detail. I think most Americans still go to the doctor, and they think that they believe that this man or woman is a professional who's on their side, on their team, and they don't imagine that they're unduly swayed by some hidden hand behind the curtain. Are you really saying that American doctors are, you know, corrupt, that they're in the pocket of companies and passing out pills and selling them that they shouldn't be?
Well, I wouldn't say they're corrupt, but they're definitely in the pockets of the pharmaceutical industry. And the studies, and I've talked to so many doctors who say, you know, these gifts that I receive from the drug industry, it's meaningless. I would never, ever change my prescribing habits to prescribe a drug that wasn't right for my patient. But the studies say just the opposite, that these drugs work. And actually, the pharmaceutical industry tracks the prescriptions for every physician in the country. So they know what works.
You're saying not that the drugs work, but that the gifts work, the gifts to doctors.
Absolutely.
What kind of gifts
Yes.
would lead a doctor to change his mind or her mind about what a patient needs?
Well, one of the significant ways the drug companies have to marketing to doctors is they hold parties or dinners or events for doctors. There's actually more than 1,000 of these parties going on every day in America. It's the doctor is wined and dined. And often the invitations that I've looked at, the doctor attending will also get a $500 check for his or her time.
And then the company tracks whether or not they prescribe their drug, and they don't get invited back if they don't prescribe? Or what's the, you know, where's the leverage?
The drug companies look at what that doctor was prescribing before that dinner, and then they look afterwards. And so if the doctor doesn't immediately start prescribing that particular drug, see, there's a lecture at this dinner, they will hire another doctor, probably someone in the community who these other physicians, you know mm-hmm. and respect, to give a speech during that dinner on why they should prescribe the certain drug. And often this doctor giving the speech has actually been trained by the drug company's advertising agency or marketing firm, and he'll give a slide presentation which has been created by the ad agency.
There's now one drug salesperson for every $6 in the United States. That is quite an army. But still, are you really saying that American doctors can be bought and sold, you know, for a juicy steak and a couple $100? They're going to be selling out their patients' health?
Well, all I can tell you is the studies show that this works. The drug companies know it works. Actually, there was one very fascinating study. It was done by a professor at Yale, and he looked at how much money the drug companies made through various marketing techniques. And he found that for every $1 a drug company spent on one of these parties or dinners for doctors, they made $11 in sales. So these things really work.
Well, doctors must be reading your book, Melody Peterson, Our Daily Meds. Do they come to you and say, thank heavens somebody's speaking out about this? Or do they say, you're making us look like bandits? Stop it.
You know, it goes both ways. I've gotten many messages from doctors saying, way to go. This is exactly what we needed. It appears to be a minority, but there is a group of doctors out there who are really worried about how far off track their profession has gone. And then, of course, I get the opposite, that this is meaningless. You know, this isn't the way I'm prescribing drugs. So it goes both ways.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about America's gigantic dependence on prescription drugs and how we got that way. Melody Peterson joins us from Los Angeles. She's authored the new book, Our Daily Meds, and she describes a pharmaceutical industry that's really turned into a giant marketing machine and co-opted a lot of medical professionals in that marketing work. Melody, let's turn to our listener, James, in Waterville Valley, New Hampshire. You're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hello, sir.
How are you, Tom? I just had a couple of comments to make, and I support your author and what she's proposing, because my prior experience was in teaching in public health and in healthcare, and I believe that it goes far beyond the damage that these essentially retail procurers are doing promoting these medications. I don't think they're very well scientifically, nor are the companies choosing for their scientific abilities while promoting these drugs. I think it extends into even the information that's published in scientific articles that's compromised because they're many times underwritten by the drug companies. They're strongly influenced by them. And the doctors themselves are having a very difficult time getting independent analytical information to make reasonable judgments.
James, my note here says you're a dentist yourself, so you have an interest in this.
I have an interest in it, and having worked with geriatric populations where there's an intense delivery of drugs, in particular nursing homes, I've seen the tremendous effects of synergistic reactions amongst multiple drug administrations, where there are multiples of what you many times see in the average population in these institutions, these nursing homes and rehabilitation centers.
Yeah.
And they're driven by all kinds of competing reasons, but I believe there's tremendous amount of over-prescribing in those settings.
Melly, you write about this, and here's a professional dentist, James, in New Hampshire, saying, you know, as a medical professional himself, he no longer knows what to trust in the research stream, even in the top academic journals. Is it corrupt?
Absolutely. This is a complaint I get from so many doctors. There is a real concern out there that our published medical research is being corrupted. Actually, what has happened, the drug industry has really learned to use science as a marketing tool.
How?
For one thing, they have this marketing technique that they benignly call publication planning. But essentially, what it means is hiring an ad agency or a smaller marketing firm to draft articles and help get them published in our medical journals.
Wait, you know, Madison Avenue drafts the so-called scientific article about a drug's efficacy?
Yes, yes. The goal here is to saturate the medical literature with positive articles about your drug. And the name of the ad agency never appears in the article. Instead, the drug company will hire a doctor or a group of doctors to put his or the whole group's name on this article as authors.
But surely they don't do that blindly. I mean, they must read and test what Madison Avenue. What does Madison Avenue know about medicine?
I know. Well, talking to people involved in this process, some of the doctors, you know, change the draft to align to their way of thinking, and some doctors don't change a word of it, and so they get the exact article that they wanted published. But even those doctors who do work hard to change the draft to get to the way they think, still that draft is edited by the ad agency and the drug companies. And so they can put words can be changed to pump up the benefits of the drug and tone down the description of the side effects, like a drug that works a little better than a sugar pill can be said to have, quote, proven efficacy. So this is very dangerous.
It sounds like a system that's awfully vulnerable, and that's before we even get to the money side. We saw in your former paper, the New York Times and elsewhere, just this last weekend, the story of the famous Harvard child psychiatrist who had Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa was digging into the records and found $1.6 million in payments to this doctor who had, really promoted the use of powerful antipsychotic medicines for children, and a lot of that money had gone unreported. So he's promoting medicines and at the same time being paid by the companies and not talking about it.
Right, absolutely. And this is not an isolated case. Most academic researchers, medical researchers in the country now take money from the drug industry, and many take hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And the university, it's very clear the universities aren't policing this. In fact, no one is policing it. Once our universities and our medical academics were these watchdogs that kept medical science honest. But now they're on the same team as the drug industry, and there's so few academics left who are independent and trying to protect the public. So this really is disturbing.
You said that when you would go out to do your reporting for the Times about this stuff, it was hard to find independent voices because it seemed every which way you turned, somebody was on some pharmaceutical company's payroll.
Yeah, I still remember this day I was writing trying to write a news story about two pain relievers, Vioxx and Celebrex. This was before Vioxx was taken off the market. And so I wanted an expert in arthritis. And so I called the biggest society of rheumatologists in the country and I said, I need an expert, but I don't want anyone who is a consultant to either of these companies. And
yeah,
they said, oh, we have so many experts, but every one of them is working for one or both of the drug companies. And I was just aghast. I couldn't believe it that so many doctors were consultants to the drug industry.
And these are the drugs we're depending on. These are the drugs that have made America the most prescribed nation in the world by a long shot. Let's go to Marjorie in Waynesboro, Virginia. Marjorie, you're on the air.
Hi there. I wanted to compliment Ms. Peterson on the accuracy of the details. I'm a nurse as well as a former drug rep, and the picture that she paints of the dinners and the experts and everything is just perfect down to every detail.
Marjorie, when you say you were a drug rep, what does that mean exactly?
It means I was a representative for a company that sold pharmaceuticals.
So you were serving up the steak and the dinners and the trips or the whole caboodle?
Mm-hmm. And, and having a physician who I brought in from into my region who would attend the dinners and give the speeches and socialize, you know, and bond with the doctors. But the my experience was that the physicians, from a bigger picture, the physicians to me are not so much, physicians were not so much mendacious as just passive, and they're pushed for time. They don't have time to do the research and the homework on their own, so they're just willing to take the path of least resistance and do what is easiest as far as prescribing. And then the other thing is, as a nurse, I think that the entire our medical system is grounded historically in paternalism, and patients tend to be passive and want to have things done for them and just to do what they're told. But the ray of hope I see is that things are changing, and that people these days, patients these days, seem to be taking more responsibility for their own health and asking for more information and changing diets. One of your former callers mentioned the synergistic effects, and that is another thing I see so much. People may take one or two medications, and then out of 15 medicines, you know, 12 of them are treating the side effects of the first two that they're taking. And as soon as they get their high blood pressure and diabetes under control, they don't need 12 or 15 drugs.
You've got layer on layer on layer of drugs, and a lot of them treating symptoms of earlier drugs in the package.
Exactly. Don't you think, Ms. Peterson?
Right. That's a very good example of how we're taking drugs we don't need. You know, any good physician would tell you that a doctor should never prescribe one drug to remedy the side effects of the first drug they prescribed. But this happens all the time now in American medicine. And for instance, I have in my book a study in Iowa where they looked at patients who had just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. And the researchers went back and looked at what these patients were taking before that diagnosis. And 30% of them were taking drugs that could harm the memory. And instead of stopping those prescriptions, they just simply added a new drug for Alzheimer's. So It's very, very dangerous.
What a picture. Marjorie, thanks for your call. Let's get one from Boston. And Brad. Brad, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Great discussion. I just wanted to make a comment on, I think, the nature of the way that most doctors are influenced by marketing. I currently work at a practice. We don't allow drug reps in the office at all other than to give some samples. We sign a document and say goodbye.
Okay.
We literally don't have discussions. I think that's the minority. But I think that... we're influenced oftentimes the same way that someone is influenced when they buy Coca-Cola versus Pepsi. So, you know, if you're seeing Coca-Cola advertised all the time and you're choosing between two equals, so to speak, you might naturally just sort of pick the one that you saw last. So to get specific, if I'm going to prescribe something for reflux, there are multiple medications that do exactly the same thing and are pretty much the same effectiveness. And
for heartburn, just, sort of, yeah.
Right, the heartburn type medication, and you might just make a decision based on, you know, what you see most often, so to speak. If they're all the same and it doesn't make much of a difference, then the drug company that markets the most and spends the most money is going to have the same effect that they would if they were selling Coca-Cola or McDonald's.
Brad, that makes it sound kind of innocent and harmless the way you put it there. But do you see it that way?
No. I mean, I think there's, you know, I just want to make the point that has been described that doctors are going to these, you know, $100 a plate dinners, and they feel like they have to pay someone back for that, and that's the reason that they're prescribing one way versus the other. And I don't think there's a quid pro quo that way. Mm. And I think it certainly exists, but I think that's the minority of that type of influence.
Dr. Brad, let me put that to Melody, if I may. Melody Peterson, what about it? Influence, yes, but not quid pro quo. No more, you know, no more dangerous in a way than Coca-Cola advertising.
Well, I think it's you know, the more these companies spend on marketing, he said that the more you see the name of a drug. So, yes, that's part of it. But also those dinners definitely have an impact. The drug companies know it. That's why they're paying for 1,000 of those parties every day.
Give us a sense of the kind of marketing Americans see that other countries don't. I mean, you're very vivid in describing it, but where do we see pharmaceutical ads that you might not abroad?
Well, you know, only the U.S. and New Zealand allow those television ads. And just 10 years ago, just a little more than 10 years ago, those would have been illegal in the United States even. It was in 1997 when the FDA weakened the rules to allow those television ads.
And, of course, now you look around, and as you remind us, billboards and scoreboards, professional sports arenas on the hoods of race cars, you name it, that marketing is everywhere. That's kind of an incredible explosion in those years. How is it justified purely in, it's just business?
It is just business. You know, the drug companies are out there everywhere trying to convince us to take more pills. And they really have learned the more they spend on marketing, the more money they can make. And this has just been disastrous for so tens of thousands of patients. One of the problems here is that the marketing is aimed at the newest drugs. A new drug might have just been tested in a couple thousand patients before it's approved by the FDA. But then Wall Street demands that the prescriptions go up, you know, skyrocket through the roof immediately. If the prescriptions don't go up that fast, then a Wall Street analyst will write a report, well, this drug is not what the company said it was, and the stock price goes down and the executive stock options go down. And so it's all driven by Wall Street. But we have so we have a drug that was just tested in a couple thousand patients, and soon it's taken by millions of Americans. And it's almost always we learn that it's far more dangerous than we thought it was in those early trials. So that's one thing that makes this marketing so very dangerous.
You write about when you're out as a reporter listening to drug company executives celebrate their creation of diseases. Describe that for us.
Oh, you know, this was another just fascinating discovery, I guess. I was at a conference where drug executives were giving speeches, and there was one speech on the agenda that just really leaped out at me. The title of the speech was, quote, "Creating a Disease." And I thought, wow.
Great.
Yes, I had no idea that drug companies were creating a disease, but indeed he got up on stage and went point by point how he and his company had created a disease.
Which one was it? Inquiring minds want to know.
This was overactive bladder. The company had a pill for incontinence, and the market for drugs for incontinence isn't very large. In fact, doctors hesitate to prescribe drugs to incontinence. Often it's elderly people who suffer from that, and these drugs are really hard on the memory, on the mind. But the company wanted to greatly expand the market. So rather than settling for just a drug for incontinence, they decided they would they wanted a disease for anyone who found themselves in the restroom 8 or more times a day. And so that's what overactive bladder is defined to be.
But you describe it as though it's a sort of very marginal condition. The treatment for it, the drug treatment, comes with all kinds of potential dangers. And yet anybody who watches the evening news on television knows that there's just a nonstop cavalcade of, you know, like, give me a break, ads for overactive bladder. It's all over the place.
Oh, now it's a huge drug category. It's amazing what has happened with that particular disease. And so every one of these drugs is a benefit is a balance between the benefit and the risk of the drug. So a drug for overactive bladder, you don't have to run to the restroom as many times a day. That's the benefit. But the drugs, like I was saying, they have they can really hurt your memory. So, and have a score of other side effects as well.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about America's giant dependence on prescription drugs and how we got that way. My guest is Melody Peterson, longtime reporter for the New York Times. She's out with a big new book called Our Daily Meds, How the Pharmaceutical Companies Transformed Themselves into Slick Marketing Machines and Hooked the Nation on Prescription Drugs. We're joined right now from Newburyport, Massachusetts, by Dr. Daniel Carlat. He is a practicing psychiatrist, editor-in-chief of the Carlat Psychiatry Report, a monthly newsletter on psychopharmacology. He's also a professor of psychiatry at Tufts University School of Medicine. And about a year ago, he took a big step back from this whole world of drug marketing. Dr. Carlat, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
You made a splash last year when you said you were done, finished. You weren't going to do it anymore. You'd gotten involved as a doctor with drug marketing and ended up saying you saw yourself having become a kind of hired gun, even your phrase here, a drug whore. What happened?
Well, yeah, I was one of those doctors that Melody Peterson was talking about, who was paid to talk to other doctors about drugs. And at first I thought I was giving, or that I was being paid to give, objective information. But you find that over time, the pressures become just tremendous to deliver the marketing points that the company that's paying you wants you to deliver. And you're just getting paid a lot of money. And every time you give a talk, the drug reps are listening and hanging on every word you're saying. So, you know, the doctors...
So they're in the audience, they're kind of critiquing just how enthusiastic you are about their drug.
That's exactly right. And the doctors, of course, don't necessarily realize that you're really part of the marketing machinery of the company. They're assuming that they're getting independent information. But, of course, the company is not paying you to do that. The company is paying you to kind of tweak the information in a certain way to encourage the audience to prescribe more of their drug.
You're a psychiatrist, so what kind of drugs were you describing or promoting?
Well, primarily I was talking about Effexor XR, which is an antidepressant. That mostly is what I was giving talks about, and that's for Wyeth Pharmaceutical. And, of course, the thing about antidepressants is there are so many of them. There are very few differences between them. They're essentially clones of one another. So the company wants you to highlight very, very minor differences that might make their drug sound a little bit better and to lay off talking about some of the side effects of these medications.
So when Melody Peterson describes a whole kind of universe here that starts to look corrupted by marketing and this kind of complicity or co-option of medical professionals, does that ring true to you?
Well, you know, I got to say, it really does ring true. I mean, you know, for doctors sincerely trying to figure out the right medications to prescribe, the really, you know, insidious story is that the continuing education courses that doctors have to take to get their medical licenses have been paid for the most part, by drug companies. In fact, over half of all accredited medical education in all specialties in the United States now are sponsored by drug companies. So I think it really has a potential to distort the practice of medicine in some of the ways that Melody Peterson details in her excellent book.
Melody, you say that medical professionals these days sometimes feel like they don't know where to turn to get accurate, honest, sort of straight-up information about drugs.
Right. That's, again, we're back to the science. So if you're a doctor who has said, I'm not listening to these sales reps, I'm not going to these drug industry dinners, when they read their medical journal, it appears that so much of the information is really nothing more than an advertisement that looks like science.
And we're paying and paying and paying, and maybe not just in cash. Let's go to West Des Moines, Iowa. And Peter, you're on the air.
Thank you for speaking with me. Several points of conversation, I hope. The gifts to these doctors that your speaker is talking about, trips, golf outings, et cetera, these are no longer allowed to be paid for by drug companies. I am a drug rep.
Okay.
5 years ago, pharma guidelines outlawed these. These are voluntary guidelines that the pharmaceutical industry follows. Second point is, speaking to many doctors, what they tell me is insurance companies and their formularies are what are mandating that they are now prescribing. They get anywhere from $15,000 to $30,000 a year in bonus money for prescribing non-generic or for prescribing generic non-bioequivalent drugs now.
So look at the insurance companies. You say, Melody Peterson, how about it? Peter's a drug rep, and he says, you can't give these drugs
right
anymore.
The industry and the AMA have these guidelines. They're voluntary guidelines that they urge the drug companies and the doctors to follow, which say that no longer can the drug rep take the doctor out on the golf course, which they were doing quite a lot. So the numbers of those outings have of the sports outings, you know, the pure entertainment, there was nothing. The dinners still go on by 1,000 a day, but even those golf outings are still going on. The last numbers I saw, 4% of these events were some of these sort of sports events. So they're still going on because it's just guidelines. They're voluntary. There's no penalty if a drug company wants to take a doctor to a Yankees game or...
But is there less of it? Are we on a corrective path here? Peter's suggesting we are. You think not, or are we?
Is it getting better? I hope so. But we really, we need a law that bans doctors from taking money from the drug industry. I think we really need this. You know, it's illegal for a music company to pay a radio disc jockey to put songs on the radio. But when it comes to something like medicines that mean life and death, a doctor can take hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and there's no law that says he can't.
Let's get a call from Augusta, Georgia, and Carl. Hi, Carl. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Many of the points that are being made, I think, are interesting but a little outdated. I'm currently in the industry, and if you look at the changes that have been moved through with the Office of the Inspector General and so on, the issue of us paying a physician to come to an educational talk simply does not exist. The other issue is having the marketing department write studies is completely not true. What happens is there are different divisions within any corporation, just like in pharmaceuticals. Mm. And the science side actually prepares the material, and those are reviewed in your legitimate journals like New England and CID and your orthopedic and so on by a whole series of people that are peers that are not paid and not influenced by the pharmaceutical company. So they may put up what is, the layout of the data, but when the articles come out, they can be completely and oftentimes are completely rewritten by the journal.
Carl, let me put that to my guests here, and thank you for that. Dr. Carlatt, first to you. Carl says, first of all, a lot of this stuff is outdated. It's not going on in that way anymore. And secondly, yes, marketing departments may have a hand in writing some studies, but the doctors have the final word.
Well, you know, in terms of the payments being outdated, yes, there are some voluntary guidelines, but the fact is that you're still able to pay doctors $1,000 for supposedly consulting arrangements or speakers training programs, which is something that I went to. And these are ways to sort of get around it. So you call these consultancy arrangements, but in essence what you're doing is you're training doctors in the advantages of your drug, and it can be considered an indirect form of bribery. But to speak to the issue of whether these articles are still ghostwritten, I respectfully would disagree. And we get this information primarily from lawsuit information because the companies won't come out and tell us. But we recently learned that Merck marketed Vioxx via essentially a team of ghostwriters that were paid by Madison Avenue public relations firms, just like Melody Peterson said. So I think it's easy to say that there are reforms going on, but when the pedal hits the metal, you know, these things are still going on, and we're still hearing about these revelations.
Melody, what do you say? We're getting pushback here from drug reps calling in and saying it's better than you suggest. We're on a good path here. Those are the bad old days.
It's still going on, actually. The drug companies are spending more and more on promotion. And as far as the ghostwriting, that is definitely still going on. I mean, there's marketing firms. You can just go on the web today and find how they describe their work of publications planning. There was one firm I saw that was bragging that they had written 100 and gotten published 150 articles on a single drug in 1 year. So that's continuing to go on. It's a big business, just this publication planning business.
If people are waiting for the government or Washington to sort of really clean this up, you're saying don't hold your breath. You pay a lot of attention to the size of the pharmaceutical lobby in Washington, the biggest of all the lobbies there, and unbelievably entrenched, more pharmaceutical lobbyists, or maybe 2-1 than members of Congress.
Right. And between 1984 and 2004, the drug industry spent more on lobbying than any other industry. But then on top of that, you add the power of the American Medical Association and our, you know, our thousands of physicians who and I'm not saying that all doctors are corrupt. I'm definitely not. But there are the majority out there really like the system, you know, that they grew up with the system and it benefits them. And they would like to continue to go to their nice dinners, to maybe get $1,000 for being a consultant, you know, a couple times a year. It's good for them and they like it. So so much needs to change. But you're right that these forces have so much power in Washington.
Dr. Carlett, since you stepped off the treadmill, the marketing treadmill or participation, has it changed the way you practice? Do you think it would change the way this country practices medicine, the health of Americans, if we could move away from the heavy marketing emphasis in prescription drugs?
Yeah, I think it would change the way physicians practice. I mean, in terms of my own practice, the influences, you know, are so subtle. But certainly when I was getting paid, you know, thousands of dollars in 2002 to hawk Effexor, I'm certain that I was prescribing more Effexor than I otherwise would have. And, you know, there's some good legislation out there. Senator Grassley has sponsored the Physician Payment Sunshine Act, where at least we'll have disclosure of all the payments that drug companies make to doctors. And Massachusetts Senate has passed a ban on all gifts to doctors. And I think that will be one of the most important pieces of healthcare legislation.
Let's go to Pat in Hamden, Connecticut. Hi, Pat. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. I just want to comment that I am a young physician. I'm a resident. And I know that many medical schools now are informing medical students of the great influence that drug companies have on physicians' practice. So speaking for the new generation of physicians, I think that you'll find fewer physicians will accept direct gifts from drug companies. However, I think we should look at the system as a whole, which encourages and condones the great influence that drug companies have. For instance, Congress, you know, passed a law, you know, saying that drug companies are able to directly market to consumers. And you'll see at a lot of, you know, medical students and great hospitals in the country, their drug companies exist alongside of them. And there's sort of a medical industrial complex that has arisen because of this that influences the data that physicians look at. So that's the comment that I had.
Pat, thanks very much for that. Melody, speak to that. You were suggesting the opposite, that you fear a generation of younger medical professionals who are so accustomed to this that they take it for granted. Pat's saying no. She thinks her generation of young doctors, she's a young resident, are going to push back. But there's a system that has its own entropy here.
You know, there are some of our younger doctors are really upset about this, and they want to make a difference. And I so hope that they can make a difference, because if they can do it, you know, starting in medical school, that can make big changes for the whole profession. So I really congratulate them on their work there.
But they're up against the system, and maybe they're up against consumer appetites as well. Let's go to Ted in Boston. Ted, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Love the show.
Thanks.
I think a major element of there being too many drugs in America is the increased consumer demand. Maybe it's because of the busy life of Americans or the direct-to-consumer advertising. Patients go to the doctor wanting a quick fix, and a lot of times the doctor is compelled to give it to them. When, you know, the real panacea would be getting off the Lazy Boy, putting out the Marlboro, and putting the ice cream in the freezer. A lot of the conditions, especially the blockbuster drugs that we're prescribing for, can be helped with diet and exercise, and it's not the message that you frequently get from the doctor, except in passing these days.
Ted, it's a great point, and Melody Peterson, you make the same one.
But
we're sort of marketed to believe that pills fix everything. Ted says, no way, get off the Lazy Boy, put out the cigarette.
Right. That's people really need to understand that these medications are not the miracle pills that they seem to be when you watch those ads with people running on the beach, dancing on the dinner cruise. It's just those ads make it make it seem that they can transform your life, that you'll have a happy family and lots of friends. And it's just, you know, these drugs have so many risks. And they can help you if you get the right one at the right time, but you definitely don't want to take something that you don't need. And you really do. I wish the drug companies would market exercise, because it's such a wonderful thing, and it helps you in so many ways.
We won't hold our breath for that, though. The profit margin is slim for the drug companies. Daniel Carlett, Dr. Carlett, are you optimistic at all here, or are we still in the clutches of this complex that our caller Dr. Pat was describing?
Well, actually, I'm very optimistic because across the country, major medical centers are now passing regulations limiting the influence of companies, limiting visits by drug reps, banning free lunches. The word is very quickly getting out, and I really do think we're beginning to reach a critical mass where doctors are going to take control of their own education. As they really should.
Let's hope for that and demand it if we can. In the doctor's office, Dr. Daniel Carlett, editor-in-chief of the Carlett Psychiatry Report, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Melody Peterson, author of Our Daily Meds, really an eye-opening book, Melody, and we appreciate all the years and effort that went into putting it together. Thanks so much for your report and your time today.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom. I really appreciate it.
Melody Peterson joining us there from Los Angeles. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.